Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg. You can follow things I do at natelindberg.com. And here to talk with me about tonight's episode of NXT, tonight being March 19th, 2024, is Bruce Hazelwood.
Hey, everybody. I'm Bruce Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. And I once again have the report up for tonight's show, which, you know, heading into Stand and Deliver, I thought it was another good show. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think you know, coming up to Stand and Deliver here, we've got things are shaping up pretty nicely, especially the feud between Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams is kind of what we wound up ending the show on here tonight. We had a main event of Trick Williams versus Noam Dar, Trick Williams winning in 12 minutes and 10 seconds with the Trick knee. However, we saw Carmelo Hayes come out afterwards with a group of security personnel, which he arrived to the building with earlier in the night. Now, I did notice that he showed up with three security guards in the parking lot, but there were four security guards that actually made their way down to the ring. I said earlier that Trick was accompanied by security guards down to the ring. Let me correct myself. Four security guards came down to the ring, the same ones that accompanied Trick to the building earlier in the night. And they surrounded the ring. Trick's Carmelo Hayes' music hit, and Carmelo comes down to the ring, except it wasn't Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo was one of the security officers that surrounded Trick Williams and attacked Trick Williams. So I kind of saw that coming because I noticed there were four officers when there were three earlier. I had a feeling that might be the case, especially where when Carmelo Hayes came out, he was wearing a hood. He couldn't actually see his face, which I mean, he does sometimes, but still, I was like, I think I got this. I thought it was a pretty good angle. The match itself was fun. Noam Dar and Metaphor, you know, obviously just an extremely charismatic group. So, you know, there was a whole bunch of interference from Metaphor and things that went on throughout the course of the match that I thought was very entertaining. Trick Williams obviously was the one to pick up the win. Makes perfect sense, especially with the beatdown from Carmelo Hayes afterwards. But Bruce, what'd you think of the main event and the angle afterwards?
Yeah, so, you know, a good match between these two. I wrote in my final thoughts for NXT that, or for tonight's show, that NXT is in this weird spot where you have to still build to Stand and Deliver, your biggest show of the year, but you also can't give too much away on free TV. And so this is one of those things, one of those matches where you could actually, you set it up by having Noam Dar call out Trick and having Dar lose the Heritage Cup before that. And his justification being how better to bounce back than going after the person that's the hottest act in all of wrestling and all of WWE. So I thought it was a good match between the two. Lots of energy, lots of character work in the best way in terms of it wasn't, how do I put this? It's not like it was Stardust out there. It was more like they were working within who they are as characters into their ring work. And so that was good for me. I do wish at a certain point that Metaphor would get away from all the shenanigans and just kind of get more serious, because we know they can be serious, and we know that the wrestlers that they do have in that group can wrestle a more serious style. And, I just discussed Noam Dar my comments too, because yeah, sometimes he has some weaselly tactics, but no matter who he's up against, whether it's Josh Briggs, whether it's Obafemi, whether it's Trick Williams, whoever it might be, he doesn't back down from the fight. He's always taking the fight to whoever he's going up against. So I think a switch to being more serious would do wonders, not just for Metaphor, but also for the tone of the show and for how they're received as an act, but also I think that would help elevate NXT a little more when you have a faction that's a little more serious. Yeah, you have your comedy. You still have some comedy with the Bloodline here and there, but it's more subtle. And so I feel like Metaphor needs to go that route. Now, going to the main event, or the angle, I should say, after the match, I think what also helped put it over, the old switcheroo, you know, it's tried and true, as I wrote, but it also works when done well. And I think what helped sell it here is that Carmelo Hayes has been coming out in a big hooded thing when he the last couple of weeks since he's been ever since he turned on Trick, right? So it also helped that the person they had under the hood had a similar build to Carmelo Hayes, so it helped put over or sell the fact that that might be Hayes. The attack afterwards, what you expect, and the one thing that you didn't mention was he hit Trick with his own finisher to finish up, to end the night and stand over him and talk some more smack. So a little bit of insult to injury there with the Trick knee at the end from Hayes. But overall, you know, they're really doing a good job of maintaining the heat and even building on it with these two and the feud that everyone's looking forward to culminating in the main event at Stand and Deliver. And, you know, you have two more weeks, two more shows to have, you know, next week I'm assuming a Trick response, and the week after some kind of face-off or I don't think you need a contract signing for this, but I'm guessing there'll be some kind of face-off with Ayla in the middle. And so there's, you know, I feel like it's in that sweet spot to where there's just enough time to where they can do some more to get people even more hyped for the match, but it's not too far away that at this point it could be a little more dragged on. So I'm really looking forward to how the next 2 weeks play out and, of course, how their feud culminates at Stand and Deliver.
No, so am I. Like, I think this is probably my favorite feud in NXT since Ciampa and Gargano back in, what was it, 2018, 2019, whatever it was. I mean, they've done such a great job building the two of them as, I mean, first, you know, just kind of like a, I mean, Trick was really kind of like a sidekick to Melo, but eventually, you know, a tag team. Then, you know, Trick became like a peer, a bona fide peer to Carmelo Hayes. So I think at this point, like, it's been an amazing story, and I think with just 2 weeks out here from Stand and Deliver, you know, they've got some. They've got just a little bit of time, just enough time where, yeah, you're right. They can put a little bit more stank on this, not that they need to. And, I think it'll certainly draw some more eyes to it, get us a little bit more hyped for it. I'd like to see Trick, you know, maybe next week, like, get one over on Melo a little bit, maybe like midway through the show. And then Melo kind of get his heat back at the end of the show, then see the stare down the next week with like Abe in the ring, you know, contract signing or something like that. In the go home show to Stand and Deliver. I think, like, at least if I'm going to fantasy book it, that's where I'd go anyway.
Also, I know that you say, Tommaso Ciampa is your guy. But I think the one thing that separates this feud from that feud is I feel like, especially in the matches, Ciampa Gargano could get a bit too melodramatic, and I think this feud has maintained a good balance of being serious and having the dramatics without going over the top.
Oh yeah, no, I would 100% agree with that. There were certainly times between the two of the between Gargano and Ciampa where things got a little bit dramatic. Matter of fact,
the 2 out of 3 falls match.
Well, I was going to say, matter of fact, here's a plug for last night's post-Raw, Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show. I'll get that out eventually. Last night, Wade and I actually had a bit of a talk about DIY and their matches sometimes being a little bit melodramatic especially with their match with the Creeds last night being a little bit janky at times. It wasn't a bad match, but funky was the word that Wade used, and I thought that was a good way to put it. I'd agree. Yeah, they can certainly get a little bit dramatic and want to kind of get too much of their stuff in, I guess, sometimes. I think, like, I'm trying to think of another time where they've done a story like this that's kind of culminated over, you know, almost 2 years, because it was essentially, I want to say it was right after Stand and Deliver. No, it was beginning at 2.0, so it wasn't after Stand and Deliver. I don't know. I'm messing my timeline up at this point.
It wasn't singular, but kind of finally working her way up to Shayna Baszler and dethroning her. It wasn't as long of a timeline, because Baszler's dominance was a sort of its own story, but that was sort of the last one I can remember feeling disconnected to an NXT, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That was after Ciampa Gargano. So I'm trying to think of anything since, you know, 2.0 is kind of a huge memory block in my head. So I think the last one was,
I can't understand why.
I mean, just think about, I think wasn't Tom at the show when she dethroned Baszler and they all rushed the ring and lifted her up or whatever.
Tom was in the ring for that.
I feel like Trick, this is the last time, this is the first time since then they've had this kind of a crowd connection with a singular act, and it's Trick Williams. So, yeah, it's interesting to see the parallels, but kind of sad in a way to see it took so long.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. But, yeah, I mean, things like this are special. They come around every once in a while. You know, I guess you can't necessarily have them every year. We won't appreciate them the way we do now, right? All right, guys. So let's go to the phone lines. 515-605-9345. Hit one on the phone on your number pad if you want to be part of the show. It'll put a little hand up next to your name, just like Reverend Keith, who I'll throw to in just a moment here. If you'd like to, you can also send us an email, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We've got three of them to get through, so we'll hit those emails after we get through our couple of callers here. We've got Keith up first, and then area code 262 is on deck. So let's go. Keith, Reverend Keith, good to hear from you, sir.
Same here, gentlemen. You guys do a fine job, and normally I'm at work at this time, so I didn't get an opportunity to call, but I was happy to be off tonight and wanted to give my input. Doc Bruce, your assessment of this episode was 100, brother. Everything that you wrote in your report was accurate, and I totally agree. Good job, Bruce.
Well, thank you, sir.
I wanted to say that the story arc between Trick and Mello has been excellent. I mean, kudos to the writing team, and it's good to see the progression of Trick Williams. I mean, he began as a hype man, and as you just said, they became a tag team. He became his peer, and now he and Mello are at odds. And he is just so over with the crowd. It is phenomenal. And he's bulked up, too. I mean, I've seen pictures of him working out on Twitter. And, I mean, the guy puts in the work, and it's paying off. I think he has been a great developmental project, not just someone that Booker T is proud of, but I'm proud of him, and I'm sure there are so many others that are proud of him. And I do hope that one day he'll become a champion. In NXT, the heavyweight champion. What are your thoughts on his natural progression thus far, and where do you think he's going in the future once this feud ends at Stand and Deliver?
Bruce, take it away.
Well, I think one of the reasons he's caught on so much with the fans is his progression was really natural. You know, when he first started having matches, he was very green, but there was a lot of potential, particularly because he had a lot of charisma that he was able to maintain from his character into the ring. And then all of a sudden, it just seemed to click in the ring for him one night, and he's just been having great match after great match after great match. And one thing I wrote in my report is, the fact that he has a flash finisher with his Trick knee is going to serve him really well no matter where he goes, because that's a finisher you can hit on anyone. And I think that's the exact reason why Randy Orton developed the RKO, is because no matter the size of the opponent, he could hit the RKO on them. Trick knee is the same thing, and it helps that Trick is also about the same size as Randy Orton, so he could hit it to whoever, right? His leaping ability, that drop kick he hit tonight was very Okada-esque. He was parallel with the ropes, right? It was just really nicely done. So I think the reason why he is so so hot with not just the NXT crowd, but we've heard chants for him on Raw and SmackDown, is because his progression has been so natural. And he hasn't tried to really – in his matches, it doesn't really seem like he's doing anything that's beyond his realm of expertise or his skill set. He'll push things at times, but it's not like he's trying to do, you know, a 630 off the top rope. That's not within his skill set. He knows that. And that also helps. So, you know, we all expect him to defeat Carmelo Hayes at Stand and Deliver be the main event and the show on a high note. And we all expect Hayes to move on. I assume from there, Trick goes back into the main title picture. And whether it's Dragunov, whether it's D'Angelo, he has a reason to be back in there. If it's Dragunov, he can say, hey, if it wasn't for Hayes, you know, I could have beat you last time. And now it's going to be a clean slate. You and me, one-on-one, no distractions, no interference, just us two. And if it's D'Angelo, I mean, they have history too. And either way, you can easily slot Trick back in there because you know he's going to be the one coming out of Stand and Deliver that everybody wants to be champion, everyone wants to get behind, and is really the face of NXT right now. So that's where I see Trick moving on or going to after the next 3 weeks and Stand and Deliver is concluded.
Yeah, I'd kind of agree with, you know, something along those lines. I mean, I think that, you know, because and obviously we haven't talked about the NXT title picture yet with Ilya Dragunov and the Don, but I'm almost leaning towards the Don taking the title from yeah, yeah, I remember you saying that. And this week I was actually thinking about that during the skit tonight, and I'm kind of like, especially now, you know, they've got a consigliere, and they're like I've been saying with, you know, with the family, that if you're going to have a mafia family, you can't just have two people, you know. I think it did too. It did sound a little different to me tonight. Although all the themes in today's day and age sound so generic, they all sound the same.
After the show tonight, go and listen to their first one and listen to the entrance from tonight, and you'll see that it's a upgrade. It's more fitting of a main event act.
So, okay, yeah, no, I'm glad you actually noticed that, because, like, I noticed the music a little bit tonight, but, like, not necessarily, like, if it was, you know, something new or whatever, but I know the Titantron and all of that, that was all different and kind of done up a little bit, again, more kind of with a main event type feel. But I say all that to say that I'm thinking the Don might walk away with the NXT title, and I could easily see Trick just slotting right in as the first opponent for the Don, if that is the case. And I could also see him, if Ilya does retain, I could see him challenging Ilya, considering their history and all of that. So one way or another, I think, if I had to guess, Trick is going to be the next challenger for the NXT title. You know, and then, you know, just kind of, you know, backtracking a little bit, everything you're talking about, you know, his rise just being super organic. I think that is part of the reason he's connected so well with the crowd. You know, partly his charisma, chemistry with Carmelo Hayes, both as, you know, friend and now foe, was off the charts. I mean, they play so well off of each other, especially when they were together on the mic. You know, they played off each other extremely well. To the point where Trick is, you know, like I said earlier tonight, he's on par with Carmelo Hayes as far as I'm concerned at this point. And I wasn't sure if Trick could ever get there. Like, and not to knock him, it was like he was just like a slight notch below Melo, and that's still an amazing place to be. So yeah, with all that said, Reverend, anything? What else do you have for us? Is there any follow up?
It will be interesting to see where the main roster places Melo when he gets back on SmackDown, because if you guys recall, they were positioning him as a babyface, albeit while he was the one in question who had attacked Trick last October. So it will be interesting to see once this feud ends where they place Melo in storyline. Do you think he'll be a babyface or a heel?
Personally, I'm hoping that he just continues on as a heel. Like, I'd love to see them because a lot of times when people get called up, their story doesn't come with them. You know, their gimmick might, but it's like, I guess probably Raquel Rodriguez is the best example. She just shows up, you know, one night on the main roster and she's no longer Gonzalez, she's Rodriguez, but it's the exact same character. And, you know, they really didn't at first, anyway, acknowledge really many of her accolades and things, and other than they probably called her an NXT champ, I had to guess, but still, you know, that's kind of the first example that comes to mind. However, now with Triple H and, you know, HBK in the creative positions that they're in, I'm thinking like, you know, and with all of the changes we've just seen across the board in WWE with, I mean, camera work and them just, you know, willing to try and do things. I would love to see Melo stay heel and then have them start showing clips of, you know, his feud with Trick, and just how ruthless and things that he can be, and just instantly make some sort of a heel impact on the main roster, whether it be, I mean, I don't think it's going to be something to the point, you know, to the effect of like attacking Cody Rhodes after he beats the, you know, it finishes the story or anything like that, though that'd be cool. But I think you should make some sort of a big impact like that if they, you know, have if they'd like to push him as hard as I think we would like to see them push him. Bruce, on heel or face?
I mean, I think the most egregious example is when Ciampa, Gargano, Ricochet, and Aleister Black were all called up to Raw and SmackDown while they were paired off in feuds against each other. But let's just forget about that for a moment here, especially
well,
when Ciampa and Gargano were in the midst of your favorite feud of NXT. So, yeah.
that's why I didn't even think about it. I have forgotten about it.
The thing with Hayes, too, is what we've seen with Triple H since he took over is more continuity between NXT and Raw and SmackDown when the acts do overlap. So I'm gonna say I'm confident that he will be moved over as a heel, and they're gonna show the video package. They're gonna show what happened with NXT or Stand Deliver. The only way that he might come back as a face is if at the end of their match at Stand and Deliver he decides to do a show of respect, raise Trick's arm or something like that, right? Kind of the old send off that way. And I could see them going back to having him as a babyface on Raw or SmackDown, or on SmackDown, that's where he was at. Now, we should also be clear here that Carmelo's babyface character has always had heel tendencies to it as well. Putting the names on, you know, the jerseys, the, you know, the nickname him, that's not necessarily stuff a babyface, a traditional babyface would necessarily do. So even as a babyface, he can more easily go heel whenever they need him to because of the fluidity between his character and the tendencies he does have even as a babyface. Plus, his heel character just has much more of a main event feel to it than his babyface character does to me. That doesn't mean he should always be a heel, but I think when you're trying to establish somebody early on, especially to an audience that isn't as aware of who they might be, I would tend to lean toward the position that makes them seem like much more of a bigger act. And to me, that's a heel with Carmelo Hayes.
Couldn't agree with you more. Keith.
Also, I would like to backtrack just a moment to say that I truly would like to see Lash and Trick begin an on-air relationship. Because, you know, they are dating in real life. But at the same token, I think that they have good chemistry with each other, even in the way in which she set them up tonight. I could see her leaving Metaphor and joining up with him. And I think that would be exciting for both of them. What are your thoughts on the pairing?
I discussed that last week.
Yeah, actually, you know, go ahead, take it. Because I was just going to say you brought that up last week.
Yeah. All I said was it seems to me that they are setting up Lash and Trick to be paired off eventually if they for the eventual breakup of Metaphor. And to me, that indicates the level of growth she's shown has not only stood out to us but also to the people that are producing the show, because if they're putting her with Trick, especially coming out of Stand and Deliver or at Stand and Deliver, he's going to be the biggest act in NXT, and right next to him is going to be Lash Legend. So I think that says a lot about their confidence, not just in him, but also in her and the development that they've seen from her. And so to me, it's – and, you know, that we keep going back to that match against Lyra Valkyria that was impromptu when Shotzi was hurt. Did she tear her ACL or else? Something happened to her knee, right? And Lash Legend came out for the open challenge and had an impromptu match that really went over well and I thought was pretty good for – a match that was thrown together on the fly. And I think that was probably the point where they said, all right, we trust her. She got this. Let's start setting the path for her to become her own star eventually, become a single star, because the one thing that I also said about the women's division tonight, you know, someone like Blair Davenport brings something so different to the women's division, not just in look, but also in style. The same thing for Lash Legend. So having more characters like that is always, that kind of versatility is always great for your show. So I think that's the path they have for Lash Legend laid out. And it's something that I advocated for last week and hope to see. You know, I wouldn't surprise me if something happens at Stand and Deliver and she's out there supporting him during his match with Carmelo or something like that, and they end the show together. But either way, I think coming out of Stand and Deliver, they will be paired off in some sort of, in some fashion, and you'll see Metaphor break up because they'll only be Meta 3 at that point, and then we can all go from there.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I hadn't really thought about it before, you know, before he brought it up last week. But the more I had thought, you know, kind of thought about it, you know, over the course of the week and things like that, like, I really like the idea. You know, the two of them, obviously, you know, like you said, dating in real life, but both of them are just insanely charismatic. I can just see them having some amazing on-screen moments. Keith, go ahead.
My second point is going to bring us a little bit further down the card, and that not too far down, but to the North American Heavyweight Championship title picture, which the title is currently held by one very much powerful, overly charismatic, and oozing machismo, as they used to say, and that's Obafemi.
Yes.
The guy is a star. I mean, point blank. Anytime they put the strap on him after six matches, and he is showing you week after week after week that he deserved it. And now for him to be placed in the position that he has been placed in, I look forward to his match against Josh Briggs, or I think they're going to end up having a triple threat between Josh, Dijak, and Femi. And I like this match. I think it's going to bring out the best in all three of them. Dijak is really one of the most underrated wrestlers in NXT. I was around him constantly when he was here in Ring of Honor. The guy is a hell of a person, and he's a great in-ring worker. He puts in the work. He deserves everything that they give him. But unfortunately, they haven't positioned him properly over the last year. He's mainly a gatekeeper, but Dijak can go, and he has potential to be North American champion. He may not, but at the same token, I would like to see a triple threat between Femi, Josh, and Dijak. Your thoughts?
So this actually is one of our email questions from JB as well. JB has three points in his email, but one of the things that he says is, you know, or he asks is, you know, is this going to be a strong enough three-way for the North American title to Stand and Deliver? And quite honestly, like, I think this could be a hell of a match if this is the direction that they go. You know, I've gone on record a million times on the show, not a huge fan of triple threat matches, but this, the energy that the three of them had in the ring tonight, I thought was really, really good. Even though they threw hands, nobody came out looking like the weak one there. If anything, Josh Briggs, because he got dumped over the top rope, but I mean, he immediately jumped back up and was up on the apron. I think it was a good segment to get, you know, kind of everybody behind the idea of this match. And I could see them putting Dijak versus Briggs, and maybe, you know, next week or the week after or something like that, and then the winner going on to do Obafemi. I could see that, but I think the way that they built up, or the way that the tonight went, rather, and kind of the fact that nobody felt like the odd man out or the weak one in that segment, to me says that they probably will go to a triple threat. I think Obafemi is going to, you know, walk out of there victorious. It fledgling into his reign, you know, I don't think it's nearly time for him to drop. But yet, especially considering Trick had like a 3-day reign or a 5-day reign, whatever it was, with that title, I love that title. I don't want to see two really, really short meaning. Well, and I don't want to say meaningless, because it's not a meaningless reign with Obafemi, but you know what I mean. I don't want to see two tiny short reigns almost back-to-back in short order with that title. But Yeah, Bruce, triple threat. How do you feel about it?
I feel like Obafemi versus either of them in a singles match is more than enough to be on the card at Stand Deliver, and having the triple threat is a way to get all three of them on the card. And you can get to either the singles matches or the triple threat over the next 2 weeks, right? So Dijak is facing Hudson, and Briggs is facing someone I can't remember right now next week. And with Ava telling Hudson earlier in the night that it's for North American Championship implications, assuming the winner of those two matches face off in a singles match, could do something like a double count out, a no contest, something between the two. Like, oh, they the ring exploding a segment where they do a big superplex and all of a sudden the ring implodes, right? I bring that up because it was part of the storyline in 2K24 and the career mode and My Rise that just happened. So, you know, the Brock Lesnar Big Show thing, right? So they could do that. They could have someone interfere. I don't think Obafemi would do it, so maybe it wouldn't go that route. But they could also get the triple. They could also get the singles route by just having Dijak or Briggs beat the other one in the match too, right? So, to me, I'd rather see a singles match, but a triple threat with these three gentlemen should be a fantastic match. I like how Dijak is bringing his Twitter persona to NXT. When Briggs called him Samuel L. Jackson Shad, who's like, "I'm white." And I was just cackling so much over here. So, and you know, Reverend Keith said he's been underutilized for a year, and I'm thinking he's been underutilized for basically his entire time at NXT, but that's a different story. You know, you go back to his ROH days, and he won their version of the breakout tournament, and then not too long after, he signed on to NXT, and people were thought, you know, especially because of his moveset, his skills, his ability to do things that some of his sides couldn't do, and of course, his finisher, Feast Your Eyes, just one of the more unique finishers I ever saw in wrestling. Up to that point, everyone thought that, you know, they would be more for him, and we keep discussing over and over again, he keeps losing feuds, and even when he loses the feud, he's the one who comes back the next week, and he always goes like, oh, I may have lost a feud, but they're the one in the hospital, right? Okay, cool. Yeah. But the whole point of the game is to win matches and to win championships. So it's good to see that he's actually going for a title now instead of, you know, being picked to be in some kind of contender match or just wanting to dish out his own brand of justice and do things with Joe Gacy, whatever it might have been, right? It's good to see him go after that. And if it was up to me, I think you could save Josh Briggs for the summer. I would go Dijak versus Femi at Stand and Deliver. And have them just go at it. Nice, you know, big, meaty, man-slapping meat match. And just, you know, Femi still smiling the entire time as he did when he whooped on Brooks Jensen. I feel like his character is just so on point. He just fully lives it and embodies it. He's just so charismatic, so cool. So just his development each week that he's out there, whether it's on the mic or in the ring, it just continues to grow rapidly. And, you know, there was a report that came out today that people backstage, the producers and higher-ups, they're really high on Obafemi and really impressed with the rate of his growth, and they all view him as a future world champion. And, you know, I just want to remind everybody, before the participants were even announced, I picked Obafemi to win the breakout tournament, so I'm going to just hold my head on that one.
Yes, you did. So, Keith, any follow-up on that? I want to we've got one of the callers been holding for a little while, so I want to make sure we get to them as well.
No, I'm in agreement with Doc Bruce. I would rather see Dijak versus Femi one-on-one, but I just have a feeling that, you know, they're telling a story with Briggs, who's, you know, trying to protect his long-lost buddy Jensen, and I could see Jensen turning on Briggs to cost him that triple threat match. That's my prediction, but either way, Femi retains. Last but not least, and I thank you for taking the call, I'm enjoying the story arc of the women's title picture between Lyra, Roxanne, getting Tatum Paxley involved. Now, they set it up so that should Roxanne regain the title at Stand and Deliver, they already have a ready-made excuse because Lyra's arm is hurt. So do you feel that Roxanne will regain the title and carry the title this time as a heel, or do you foresee Lyra retaining?
I am hoping that Roxanne winds up taking the title off of Lyra. You know, we've talked a little bit about it, or actually quite a bit about it on this show. You know, Lyra, you know, her title reign, while I don't think it's been bad, I feel like has been kind of lackluster, a little stale, hasn't really completely, excuse me, hasn't completely grabbed me. But that said, you know, this whole thing with Roxanne Perez and her turn, it's very intriguing right now. You know, we're seeing the side of her that we haven't seen before, this edge to where we haven't seen before, you know, where she never did lose the title, and she feels like she's entitled to, you know, essentially just be handed the belt and whatever. I would love to see her overcome Lyra and then just start bragging about winning the title again, and, you know, and how maybe even just start talking about how it was handed back to her because it was so easy to beat Lyra or something like that, you know? But I would love to see that. I think Roxy could pull it off, you know, and I've gone on record on the show as well saying I didn't think Roxanne's original run was, you know, something to write home about. There's just something about her as champion that didn't feel incredibly credible to me. So now with this new edge to her and this new, you know, character, I can see her as champion, you know, because it's like she's more cutthroat. You know, she'd be willing to, you know, take a couple shortcuts maybe to win or retain the belt. And I think it might be, dare I say, more entertaining than her original run. Bruce.
That is an indie wrestler name if I ever heard one. The incredibly credible Nate Lindberg. That is just, yeah.
Right?
Don't know if you caught yourself saying that, but it was, I had to stifle a laugh as you said that.
I did, actually. As I was saying it, I'm like, I know what I meant to say, but that's what I said. So, you know, it worked.
Correct me if I'm wrong. You've also gone on the show and said that you haven't been the biggest fan of her heel run as well, or her heel turn thus far.
No, it was mostly her acting. I was a little bit critical of her acting so far, but the heel turn itself, I have been in favor of.
And then I think that Kelly and I are both higher on her acting thus far as a heel than you have been. I think tonight was another great show for her. You know, let's also remember that it's not just the fact that she never lost the title. It's the fact that she's never had a full singles rematch for that championship, right? Because the only one that she had with Lyra Valkyria was interrupted by Lola Vice cashing in her contract and turning into a triple threat. And so, and remember, she wasn't involved in that decision either because Valkyria was the one who pinned Lola Vice. So she has legitimate gripes, and it's interesting to see how as she's become more and more heel, her reasoning has more from never receiving a singles match to the title should be relinquished to me because she's hurt. Or it should just be mine because I never got my match, right? It's become more heel-ish in a believable and conceivable way because of how she's gone about this character. And attacking the arm so thoroughly, I will say I didn't like the fact that Valkyrie had an arm in a sling, but yet when she was throwing her punches, she had that arm moving up and down and around like it was nothing. I know, it's Yeah, you got to sell a little bit more. So that threw me off a little bit. But Perez, I think, has just been doing an incredible job as a heel. And the biggest thing that we've talked about with her in this heel turn is a lot of people, and we pointed to Seth Rollins being the biggest example, cannot make that switch between a heel style and a face style in the ring. And she has done a masterful job of becoming a heel in the ring and not just as a character and not just in promos. And tonight, especially, all she keeps doing every match she's in, she's attacking a body part and targeting that body part and working on it. And tonight, it was all about the shoulder because now she's getting over the crossface as her new finisher. She hit Pop Rocks, but that wasn't her finish. She used that to transition into the crossface, just like she has been doing the last couple of weeks. So to me, Roxanne Perez not only has been doing a fantastic job in this transition to a heel, but I've been saying for weeks that pretty much since Vengeance Day and the inkling of her heel turn, right when I believe it was that night that Shotzi got hurt, they had that little, because it was an edited tape show. They're able to edit this in where they had that little backstage segment where she threw the TV to the ground, right? And pretty much from that moment, I said, yes, give me this Roxy, make her champion. And I've also, because I've also gone on record and discussed that, I just haven't been a big fan of Lyra Valkyria's run. I feel like it's been just kind of bland. And Roxanne Perez is bringing a lot more to the screen, to the show, to me, when I'm watching it. I feel much more connected to her and her character and much more intrigued about what she's going to do than what Valkyria does. And that's not a knock against Valkyria. I just don't think that she's been booked necessarily the best. So, and I don't know if the whole Tatum Paxley thing has helped her or hindered her or what, but I feel like Roxanne Perez is going to come out of this as champion after Send and Deliver, regaining her title and just being sort of a fool in the best way possible, running the division. And she's one of those, just like Noam Dar. It doesn't matter how big or how small you are. She's got to take the fight right to you. And that's one thing I like in my champion, even if they are a heel. I'm not always the biggest fan of all heels having to be weaselly. I like my heels who have some spine in them sometime too, but are still mm-hmm. heels. And so that's what I'm looking forward to with Roxanne Perez.
So am I. And guys, thank you so much for taking my call. I agree with you 100% tonight, Doc Bruce, and keep doing the good job that both of you guys are doing. Nate, you were great last night with Wade, and hopefully
you,
I'll get a chance to talk with you guys soon. Have a great night. God bless.
All right. Thank you very much, sir. Sure. Always a pleasure. All right. So let's now go over to area code 262. Let us. I don't recognize the number, so if I do,
I should know
who you are.
I am a new listener and a first time caller. A buddy of mine listens to Wade Keller all the time. I said, "Man, I'm a big NXT fan. I wish there was an NXT show that I could call into, because I love NXT more than Raw and SmackDown." I'm just saying. And he goes, "There is an NXT show." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, I wish I could call in and talk to him." And then, like, last week he goes, "Oh, you can." Well, last week there was a lot of stuff going on. So today I'm calling in. So my first thing I want to say is thank you for letting me come in and join you guys with your show. I really appreciate it. Let me introduce myself. My name is Frankie. I'm from Milwaukee, home of your guy Tommaso Ciampa.
Right.
And I actually got to meet the guy. He is such a great guy. Excuse me. I actually got to meet him at an NXT show in Milwaukee. We did the Midwest tour. Milwaukee, Green Bay, Chicago. It was amazing. Oh,
that's awesome.
NXT. The reason I'm calling is, dude, I am a huge Dijak fan. Ever since Dominik Dijakovic. I've been a Dijakovic fan since day one. My living room is wrestling themed, okay? And there is a huge Dijakovic section. No lie, where there's T-Bar stuff, there's Dominik Dijakovic stuff, and there's Dijak stuff. And I absolutely love the guy. I talked to him on Instagram. I got a cameo from him. Like, I'm not lying. I'm a huge fan of the guy. So everything he's been doing lately just blows my mind. And I'm like, dude, he's finally getting recognition, because he was getting recognition when he was Dijakovic. But then when the T-Bar thing happened, I was like, oh, God. They literally put Bane's mask on his face. What the hell?
I know.
Like, this is going to fall right on its face, and it's going to suck. And I was rooting for him so bad, because I'm a huge fan, and it flopped. It was horrible. And still rooted for the guy, because I'm, like I said, a diehard fan, but thank God he got back to NXT. They did the Dijak thing, and he's a solid heel, right? But I want to tell you guys this. If you notice, every time Dijak comes to the ring, he's like primarily all black, right? If you mm-hmm. notice tonight, he had a white belt on, and his shirt was unbuttoned. And underneath the shirt, you seen yellow. There's color coming in, which, like, and you've seen the colorful comebacks with the Samuel L. Jackson. Dude, I'm white. You know what I mean? Dude, I'm sensing a possible face turn. you know, or maybe like maybe not the face turn, but like the fringe guy, kind of like Goldberg, you know what I mean? Where it's not a baby face, but he's not a heel. He's like right on the fringe, like Randy Orton, Goldberg kind of thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I could certainly see something along those lines for him. I mean, like, I don't know. I think if he was to become a face, I'd like to see it, like, kind of organically happen. Not that I think he couldn't pull it off or anything like that. He absolutely could. Matter of fact, you know,
when he was Dominik Dijakovic.
Oh yeah, yeah. And actually, where I live, I'm only maybe about 20 miles away from the school that both he and Ciampa you know, trained at. And I was lucky enough to see them at like my local indies and things like that for quite a bit. Just absolutely phenomenal talent. So I'm completely in agreement with you. I'd love to see the guy, you know, succeed and climb up the card. I'm glad that they're finally getting to give him some meaningful time. I mean, like, you know, when he was in that feud with Ilya, it just felt like it was going on and it was dragging on forever, you know? And so now it's kind of...
Because Joe Gacy, ironically, is like my second favorite guy in NXT. It was like, it's the main event and it's the mid card for me.
Yeah.
Like, literally, I felt like it was the main event for me and it was the mid card.
You know what? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter.
Like,
everybody's got their.
To me, it was like The Rock versus Stone Cold. You know what I mean? Joe Gacy versus Dijak. And everyone
looked at me like
I was weird. Like, really? Joe Gacy and Dijak? I'm like, dude, you haven't seen these guys win, man. Oh, man. Just watch these guys.
For sure. For sure. Bruce, do you want to weigh in at all on Dijak?
I already discussed some earlier, so I'll just go on to the next point.
Okay, sounds good.
With the Dijak thing that I really want to say is if they're going to do a triple threat, I'd rather see them do a triple threat than a one-on-one with Dijak and Oberfenning. And here's why. With the one-on-one with Oberfenning, I agree. It's not right. It's too short for Oba to lose, to drop the title. And I think if Dijak lost, like if it was a clean win for Oba, which I believe it should be, I think it would hurt Dijak. You know what I mean? But if you throw Briggs in there, you know what I mean? Then Oba could pin Briggs, and Dijak is left with his shoulders not touching the mat, and he's okay. Do you get what I'm saying?
Actually, I think it was either Keith or Bruce. I forget which one, but one of you guys mentioned earlier in the night, the possibility of Jensen costing Briggs triple threat. Okay, yeah, I know somebody mentioned it. So Briggs could even come down, you know, interfere in that match, you know, and Briggs winds up eating the pin because of interference from Jensen. Dijak, he loses, but he didn't actually get beat, and Obafemi still looks strong by retaining the title. So I mean, I think that's a great scenario to keep everybody strong, also progress the feud with Briggs and Jensen.
I've been watching wrestling my whole life since I was 10 years old. And I'm 45, you know, well, actually I can't say all my life. This is the embarrassing story with me in wrestling because everybody, when they start watching wrestling, they believe it's real, right? So when the Tatanka heel turn happened, I still thought wrestling was real. And Tatanka was like my guy at the time. So when Tatanka joined Ted DiBiase in the $1 Million Team, I literally cried and said, no, Tatanka, how could you do that? And my father laughed at me and said it's fake. I'm like, no, it's not. Tatanka just turned on him. And I quit watching wrestling till the Attitude Era. I'm not even lying.
Yep. But, no, I hear you.
I literally thought it was real.
No, so, I mean, I think, especially as kids, I think we all kind of, you know, I know I did. You know?
I mean, my little side note thing is I really miss Cora Jade, and I really hate that she keeps getting hurt. Because I'm a big fan of Cora Jade, huge fan of Cora Jade. But the big the next point I really want to bring up, because I think we really kind of hit everywhere we needed to go with Dijak, the D'Angelo family story here. Now, I'm a huge, like, I love Tony D'Angelo, really big fan of the Don, okay? And I liked how they added in someone else. And his name always just trips my tongue. The new guy, the lawyer type figure.
Oh, now that that's escaping me too. I want to say Luca. Thank you. I want to say Luca Brasi. I'm like, that's the Godfather, Nate.
No, it's Crucifino. I forget his first name. But
Luca.
To me, like, I love Tony D'Angelo. I love it, but it seems like. It almost seems slapsticky, like kind of comedy. Like it doesn't seem like a real mob type feel. You know what I mean? It seems kind of comedy-like. And I'm like, I want to get behind this Italian mobster family feel, but it seems kind of slapsticky.
I mean, maybe a little bit. I mean, I don't know, Bruce, do you feel like it's slapsticky or you know, what's your take, I guess, on that?
It happened until he won that match against Carmelo Hayes and then intimated that he was going to murder Ilya Dragunov off the bridge last week. And I think the music changed tonight and how they came out and they weren't playing to the crowd. They had a much more serious presentation, I think, is the path they're taking to make them seem like a more serious act. And I think it's working, but I'm still not, I don't think tonight did anything to me in terms of making me more excited for their match of Stand Deliver.
Yeah. I mean, it was a decent segment, but like, you know, it really didn't for me either, especially where Ilya didn't actually appear. You know, and I can kind of understand that because I'm sure he's, you know, goes home to his family every once in a while. So can't show up on every show, but, it wasn't a bad segment, but it didn't necessarily get me super hyped for what's coming up. But they still have 2 weeks, they still have 2 weeks to get us there. So
it almost right now feels like the main event is Trick Mello.
Yeah. And I know obviously you're new to the show, but you know, we talked quite a bit in our archives, about Trick and Mello for the title. Was it Vengeance Day or the one before that, a Roadblock, where they had the triple threat, Mello, Trick, and Ilya for the title. We thought that, you know, or at least I thought that, you know, Mello was going to walk away with the title, and you know, then he and Trick were going to have some sort of a feud leading up to Stand and Deliver. Obviously that's not where it went, but like I thought it was going to wind up being for the title. It's been that important. However, at this point, I don't think it needs the title. Is kind of a testament to that feud. But
he basically said for a year it was going to be Trick and Mello for the title, and Trick was going to just dethrone Mello. We thought Mello was going to hold the title all the way through, but obviously their plans were different from what we had laid out.
Yep.
I'll have to go back and listen to it then. I did have some rebuttal statements that I wrote down here, and I apologize that I didn't see it till just now. because someone was saying earlier that, like, the gimmicks don't follow, right? Something like that. I can't remember. But if you guys remember, Bobby Roode was a heel in NXT, like when he was like NXT champion and everything. But when he made the jump to the main roster, quote unquote, he was immediately a babyface. And Big E, when he was in NXT, he was a babyface. But when he made the jump to the main roster, quote unquote, he was a heel teamed up with AJ Lee and Dolph Ziggler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that was kind of like our point is, you know, a lot of times we get the called up from NXT to the main roster. There's that drastic, you know, there's a shift and their story doesn't necessarily follow, you know, but we're kind of hoping with kind of the new creative that's not the case. And, you know, with like, I think it was, yeah, we were talking about Mello, you know, hoping when, you know, if and when he does get
really
called up, that the story does follow. Yeah.
Yeah, I had one more rebuttal statement, and I apologize. I don't want to take up all the time, but I noticed a lot because you were talking about Lash and Trick getting paired up on TV. They're doing that a lot now where they're pairing real-life couples up on TV as, you know, like you're in real life? Well, let's pair you up on TV. Like they're doing that with Bianca and Montez Ford as much as they can. Like, you know, they were doing it with Cena and whichever Bella he was with. They did it with Daniel Bryan and the Bella that he was with. You know, they were, you know, and I forgot the other couple. It's brain farting me.
Seth and Becky.
I'm sorry?
Seth and Becky.
Yeah, Seth and Becky, but they did it for Naomi and one of the Usos.
Naomi and I can never remember. I think it's Jimmy. Yeah,
I think it's Jimmy. Yeah, they literally paired them up for a while. So it's like, if they actually do it with Lash and Trick, I think they're going to keep doing it. Like it's going to be a trend. And I would really be glad to see it. I know this is an NXT show, and I got one more point. I'm sorry. I want your opinion on this real quick.
Sure.
A buddy of mine brought this up. I know you're NXT, but a friend of mine brought this up. We got a wrestling group, and we were talking about it. When Alexa Bliss comes back from maternity leave, wouldn't it be cool? Because Bailey did the damage control thing, if she started another stable with the witches, Isla Dawn and
Alba Fire.
I forgot. Alba Fire, thank you. Like, if that was a stable, I was like, oh, wow. Well, let's ponder on that because that sounds like it would be wicked.
So you're saying what, Alexa Bliss, Bailey, Isla Dawn, and Alba
no,
Fire?
No. Bailey, like, okay, because there was a female stable with Bailey because
right.
she formed damage control, you think it would be a plausible thing with Alexa Bliss when she comes back doing it with the witches? And if they did, how well do you think something like that would go over?
I think it would depend on how they, like, what kind of, or which version of Alexa Bliss we got. Like, if she was to do kind of some of the things that she was doing with Bray to kind of, and I could kind of even see that, maybe to try and keep, you know, Bray's memory alive or something like that, you know, kind of as a nod to him, you know, kind of keep some of
which
the spookier elements of that character.
So, since we're not getting him inducted, you know?
Yeah, so, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to it. I certainly wouldn't be opposed to it. I think that could be fun. That could certainly be fun. But thank you very much for calling. You said that's right, Frank. That's right. I was going to ask your name.
Yeah,
you said it earlier.
Yeah, that's right. Thank
All
you
right.
guys so much. I really appreciate it. I'm going to keep listening to you guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. And, yeah, keep you know, keep listening, calling in, and glad that you found us. Glad you found us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you. All right, so let's hit the mailbag here. Like I said earlier, you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Just we'll start with JB's email because we already got a third of the way through it anyway, talking about Obafemi, Jensen, and Dijak earlier. So JB's second point here is he says, are Sean Spears, Rich Holland, and Joe Gacy going to form some sort of a stable after we saw Gacy and Spears' locker room in the backstage segment tonight? If so, I hope it's a big improvement over Schism. And his third one, will Dragunov and D'Angelo be able to live up to the standard that we've come to expect for the quality of a stand and deliver title match during NXT's biggest weekend? So, actually, that's I like that one. I'm because I had that thought myself between Dragunov and D'Angelo. I'm D'Angelo has
that's the
impressed.
First thing we talked about when the
yeah,
match happened.
It's like, you know, actually, yeah, you're right. We talked quite a bit about that. You know, one of the things that, you know, that you've been saying quite a bit is that, you know, you wanted to see D'Angelo, you know, bring some of his amateur wrestling background and things in. He started to do that. He's, you know, started to get, it mixes offense up a little bit more from kind of the, mostly generic. Yeah, just kind of bland. That's a better word than a generic. The bland offense that you know he had towards the beginning of his run. So I'm optimistic, especially because Dragunov is Dragunov. He's an absolutely just incredible talent. You know, and it's plays the underdog you know extremely well. Which I mean, still I think he might be considered an underdog going into this, considering his size and. He's, you know, going up against a stable, I guess, here. So I'm hoping it does live up to the standard. I'm cautiously optimistic, but we'll see. And then, you know, I hadn't really thought about Sean Spears, Ridge Holland, and Joe Gacy forming a stable. I thought maybe the Sean Spears and Joe Gacy thing might be like a feud or something like that. I wouldn't be opposed to it. I'd rather see if that was the direction that they went, I'd rather them see Spears and Gacy as a team rather than throwing Holland in the mix. Cause right now I don't know what they're doing with Holland. It's just a sob story. Woe is me. I can't live up to my own expectations and it's not engaging. It's not entertaining. I don't understand like where they're going with it because I figured by this point in his run in NXT, he would have at least had, you know, one or two stepping stones to redeeming himself. But instead, like, I almost feel like he's going to become like the Brooklyn Brawler or something like that. I don't know. Bruce, on the Spears, I don't know why I keep wanting to say Spears. The Spears Holland Gacy thing and Dragunov and D'Angelo.
I don't think a stable's coming between those three. It sounds more like, based off of the promo they showed tonight from from Rich Holland on Instagram, I believe it was, that he is going to do a heel turn and fully just buy into his tendencies to injure wrestlers as the storyline has been written. So I don't think there's going to be a stable. I think it's more likely that Spears and Gacy become a tag team more so than the three become a stable, but I think it's better to keep all three separate, especially because even though Sean Spears came back, he still has, if you know the history of NXT, like most NXT viewers, I'm pretty sure are the ones that have been watching for a long time, especially after 2.0, right? So they're probably aware of days as bland-ass Ty Dillinger teaming with the likes of... No, I'm talking before this.
Oh, yeah, even before
where he's
the
wearing those
10.
Maroon
okay, yep.
and gray trunks, and he's teaming with Angelo Dawkins and other folk, and there's just nothing there, and then all of a sudden he becomes Perfect 10, and then he gets off, and the Royal Rumble thing happens, and yada, 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 and then it just fizzles out, goes to AEW, and I know the COVID shows are different, but my lasting image of him in AEW is when they pulled down his pants and he had the boxers on with Tully Blanchard's face on the crotch, right? Like, I just don't – I can't he's not a serious character to me, no matter what he does. Okay. I can't take him as more than the position he's in right now. Right. So, to me, Gacy is someone who has more potential, and keeping him away would be the best option. So, stable, no, probably a feud for Spears after whatever happens with Holland is all over.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking. Like, I don't necessarily see a stable between the three of them, or even, like I said, maybe a tag team between Gacy and wow, I keep wanting to do that, Spears. But even then, I think it would be more feud than anything. Cause it kind of seems, I don't know. I was going to say it's cause it seems like Gacy's like stalking Sean Spears right now, but, maybe that is the way that Gacy thinks he can make friends. So, who knows? JB, thank you very much for the email. As always, look forward to one next week. Kevin Tanny says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I'm not sure I speak for everybody, but I'm excited to see the Good Brothers in a Mania match. Pay no attention to them having to come down to NXT to qualify, though. That said, the women's division continues to move at a frenetic pace, and I've heard a tale that Gigi will be undergoing an appearance change, so we'll see how that goes. Lastly, I thought that Trick looked good tonight, and I thought that Noam was a great opponent to create movement around him. I do feel like Trick looked a little winded in the middle of the match, but outside of that, it's hard to deny his charisma and his athletic ability. Is it safe to say that the student beats the teacher at Mania so that the teacher can make his full move to the main roster? Oh, yes, of course. That's how it's going. It's going down that way, Kev. It's going down that way. Thanks, as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin Picatinny, PhD. As far as all of the Trick and Mello stuff goes, we talked quite a bit about that tonight. I think we've already answered that question there. We haven't really talked about Gigi Dolin. She was in that backstage segment where she was called Georgina by Ariana Grace. I don't know why that tickled me so much, but it did. I actually audibly laughed out loud when she said Georgina. I really like what Ariana Grace is doing right now. This is going to be interesting. I don't know where it's going to go per se, but Ariana Grace comedy. Yeah, it's going to be comedy spot. But Ariana Grace, she named was it Miss NXT in training? She named Georgina Dolin tonight and put a sash over her. While she was talking to, was it Ren? I think it was Ren Sinclair backstage. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, cool. Wow, my memory's actually like not doing bad tonight. So
he's secretly reading my report, everybody.
I mean, I do have it open in a tab, but right now I'm looking at Kevin's email. What the hell was I saying? Oh, yeah, no. So Gigi Dolin. Yeah, so I do. I think we're going to see a bit of an appearance change for her. And I've said this a couple times on the show. It has to happen before she goes to the main roster, if and when she goes to the main roster, because of the just exact same hair color as Becky Lynch. When Becky Lynch was in NXT as NXT champion, there was even a spot where both of them were in the ring at the same time. And I remember saying to myself, like, that can't happen. Like, not that, you can't have the same color, I guess, but like it's almost the same cut, the same color. It's not going to help Gigi stand out. I mean, yeah, you can do it, but it doesn't help Gigi stand out as, the lesser performer, the lesser known performer. Might even make people think, Becky Lynch wannabe or something like that. And, for people that haven't watched NXT, if and when she does go up. Obviously, she has had, dance a little bit with the main roster as part of Toxic Attraction while they were, still together. I think it was before Mandy got released. It might have been shortly thereafter.
That tag team tournament where they were a fill-in for somebody that they got hurt, so that's be another fill-in or something like that.
Yeah, it was something like that. That's right. She's already kind of had a soft debut, but, that's going to need to happen. So this might be a good way to start that. I feel like Ariana Grace is probably, if she does give Gigi a makeover and Gigi allows her to do it, I could see her dyeing her hair black, brown, you know, some sort of a, you know, basic color. And then Gigi maybe, you know, having some fun with it from there after the, you know, after the angle's over. But, I think it's probably a good direction for it. I've talked a little bit about the Good Brothers on the show last week, last few weeks anyway. I'm excited to have them in NXT. I mean, I feel like, you know, they haven't done a whole hell of a lot in WWE period, but I like them. I like their sense of humor. Not for everybody, definitely not everybody's cup of tea, but you know, I enjoy them. I enjoy what they bring to the table. So it's fun to see them in NXT. Glad to see that they're actually getting, you know, getting some action on WrestleMania weekend. Even if they did have to come down to NXT, which is totally fine. They're, you know, bringing a little bit more to the table here. So Bruce, on the Good Brothers, on the women's division with, Gigi rather. And then I don't know if you have anything else to talk about with Trick, but yeah.
Sorry, my 9-year-old dog is chasing his tail, which he still does because he thinks he's one and not nine. To Tanny's point about Trick and getting tired, when the match started, my concern was, did he already blow himself up? Because he was so hyped during his entrance and when he was on the turnbuckle, and I was like, oh no, he's gonna be so tired. But hey, the match pulled out at the end, it was all fine. With Gigi Dolan and Ariana Grace, I like that they talked about the oddity of having a low blow in the match, and of course the ref only saw when Gigi Dolan did it. But I think when it comes to the character change and the appearance change, she pretty much, it's not a matter of if she's going to let Ariana Grace do it. She pretty much agreed to let this happen when the stakes of the match were that you become her protege and you basically do what she wants, right? Within reason, mm-hmm. right? And so yep. I feel like it's got to be coming no matter what. You already see that with the Miss NXT in training. So she's got to definitely turn into some sort of a pageant character, I guess, going in the modeling off of Grace. And of course, eventually it's going to be the feud, you know, they're going to feud with each other. Dolan's going to get her, Grace is going to receive her comeuppance from Dolan. We're going to go from there. And we talked about when this match was made, how, you know, Gigi Dolan has a face. They tried. It was a singles wrestler. And it just never got anywhere. Maybe this is a pathway to actually getting her back, you know, to having a better fan reaction and becoming more of a attraction on NXT. And we also didn't discount the possibility that they become an odd couple tag team eventually, and one that where their quirks work well off of each other, kind of like, you know, I'm not saying they are going to be them, but you had your Kane and X-Pac teams, right? Your Dan O'Brien, Kane, those kind of teams. Sometimes oddball tag teams work. I mean, the Wolf Dogs right now are an extreme oddball tag team, and they're working pretty damn fine right now, which as singles wrestler, we weren't great fans of them, and here they are, one of the best acts on NXT somehow, which I cannot believe I'm saying about Braun Breaker and Baron Corbin, but there we are. So, and when it comes to the Good Brothers, the OC, you know, after the first match, I said, you know, LWO already qualified, Action Nathan Fraser qualified. I'm assuming that whatever teams are left, the team that is more hard-hitting and less high-flying will go over just to balance the teams out, because I had forgotten that it was the Good Brothers versus Tank and Tank. Not because either team was necessarily bad, but we also discussed how this impromptu tag team tournament was just felt kind of lacking impact with the teams they had within it, and it led me to discuss how I think the men's tag team division has had a lack of depth recently, especially with people like the Creed Brothers moving on and whatnot, and Gallus just being defined so far down, and how the women's division on the offense side is forming a lot of new tag teams and has more depth there. So OC, we said they're gonna win the triple threat. It just doesn't seem like they're not going to. It doesn't seem like LWO is, you know, needs to win it. And then Action Nathan Fraser have already lost Wolf Dogs a couple times, so I don't think they're necessarily set up to be the next challengers or the next champion. Whereas I think OC will win. And again, 3 weeks ago, I would never have thought this, but I think they're going to beat the Wolf Dogs at Stand and Deliver. And then the same night during the Andre, Breaker is going to eliminate Corbin on his way to winning the Andre as a way to get him that sort of main event rub as he becomes solidified on SmackDown along with Nick Aldis. So, yeah, not much else to add after that, I guess, but I did add a lot, so.
All right. There we go. There we go. Kevin, your email has been answered. All right. I don't know. I'm getting punchy. Let's go to Azan White. Azan says, good evening, NXT gang. Do you sense a renaissance for Dijak in 2024? I've been seeing
a lot of
support
Dijak
from
tonight.
Lately. Yeah. I've seen a growth of support from lately online and from NXT crowds. So actually, let's stop right there. So, I think maybe we will. You know, with a lot of people talking about Dijak, I think actually, well, we have both of our callers, emails. Maybe we'll see some good things in the future for Dijak here. I'm hoping.
And the growth of support online definitely has to come with the fact that he's one of the best Twitter followers.
Oh God, he really is. He absolutely is. I really am only on Twitter on Tuesdays for the show. And if I'm on the post show with Wade or something like that, like I was last night, like I'll jump on. But other than that, I really don't pay attention to Twitter throughout the course of the week. But man, when I do catch one of his tweets, I mean, he's great. Great follow. All right. His second point, what are your thoughts on Drew Gulak's work in NXT over the last year? I say tonight was his best match since the saga with Bryan Danielson during COVID. I couldn't necessarily say if it was his best match or not, because I know I've seen most of his matches, if not all of them, and since he's been back in NXT, but he's always an amazing competitor. I wouldn't fault you for saying that tonight was his best match since fighting with Bryan Danielson or Daniel Bryan back then. So far though, I think Drew Gulak in NXT has been great. He's a great addition. He's not obviously in a major role, but the No Quarter Catch Crew, they have their place. I feel like they're a solid team right now. I love what they're doing with the NXT Heritage Cup. In the catch clause and everything there. So I'm a big fan. Plus Gulak, him and I had a little Twitter beef like about a year ago during, I got to look at my poster. I went to Battleground. And I ended up replying with one of his tweets in the middle of Battleground, and he responded and we went back and forth and then started talking about the Princess Bride. So Gulak has my respect. Yes. Gulak has my respect, a fan of the Princess Bride anyway. And his third point, with LWO winning last week on NXT and losing on SmackDown, and now with Alpha Academy losing last night on Raw and getting a chance in NXT to be tag champs, does it seem like WWE is making NXT tag belts look lesser in a weird way? From Azan in St. Louis. I got to reread that. With LWO winning last week in NXT and losing SmackDown, now with Alpha Academy losing last night on Raw.
He's essentially saying, are the tag titles being defined down because teams that are losing on Raw and SmackDown are appearing for a tag team championship opportunity in NXT?
Okay. There was and not that I'm knocking on you at all, Azan, but there was a bit of a run-on sentence, and my ADHD went, wait, what is this? So that's all. But
yeah, blame the emailer, Nate. Good call there.
I'm not blaming anybody. I said blaming my ADHD. No, I mean, I guess you could look at it that way to a point, but by the same token, NXT is not an official third. I mean, I guess it is an official third brand, but they're not pushing it like a third brand like they once did. NXT is developmental. It is technically, I guess, in the kayfabe hierarchy grand scheme of things, it is a lesser brand. As much as I hate to say it, shouldn't be looked at that way, but I guess, kind of is. I guess it makes sense. Like, hey, all right, we didn't qualify here, but we'll show up down in NXT. Plus, the other thing too with, being down in NXT, or I say plus, I meant kind of devil's advocate, other side of things here. Coming down to NXT, people that watch NXT, a lot of people do still watch the main roster, but it's a treat to get main roster, down in NXT. So I think it's still a net positive to see Alpha Academy and Maxine, Otis, Akira Tozawa show up on NXT. It's fun. Otis and Akira both, actually all three of them, have a connection to NXT, even though Maxine's extremely short. So it is cool to kind of see them come back and things like that. So I don't know. I guess you could make the case for kind of defining down the tag titles, but I don't personally see it that way. But what about you, Bruce?
So what was the second question again? I just had it.
About Gudrulak.
Gudrulak. Yes. Your guy, Gudrulak.
Yes.
So I think the best thing about him in NXT is, unlike when they had him on Raw, SmackDown, is he's not doing stuff that's outside of what his character would do, and he's not trying to be comedic or over the top. He's just basically catch point again, right? And that seriousness, I think, really helps, and it helps when you have a group like Metaphor to juxtapose them with a group like No Quarter Catch Crew. Now, the thing that I was concerned about once they became the Heritage Cup champion is exactly what happened tonight, and it's that the shenanigans from Metaphor being holding the Heritage Cup transferred over to No Quarter Catch Crew, and it's how they're maintaining hold on that title. But moving on to the last point about the tag team division, the men's tag team division, and titles, you can make the argument, sure. I think the biggest thing that you could use against that is what you just said, is that the teams that are coming down, even if briefly, have, for the most part, the Good Brothers maybe aside, have a connection to NXT, whether it's LWO, whether it's Alpha Academy tonight. You are getting people that have spent time in NXT, either because they came down for a little bit before or because that's where they began their WWE careers. And I think in that regard, it helps people sort of, especially the longtime NXT viewers, that feeling of nostalgia, or at least knowing that they have that connection, I think diminishes any bit of, oh, they lost on Raw and SmackDown, and they're coming down because it's easier, quote unquote. And, you know, if it was still the family, maybe, as the tag team champion, I could get that, but Braun Breaker and Baron Corbin have been a really good tag team. Breaker was, I think, a two-time men's champion. So I feel like right now probably not the best time to make that argument, although when you look at, just when it comes to the top part, but when you look at the depth side, I can see where that argument can come into play. I think the difference here is that the one team that looks like they're going to win at least has been, if I remember correctly, booked a little better than the team than LWO. But there's been so much that has happened with the Good Brothers over the last however many years, both in and outside WWE, that it's hard to keep up. And LWO, for too many times, seems like they just become the high-flying team to put over whatever team is going on next, right? And so I think that's what's going to happen here as well. Especially with the entire storyline they have going on with Santos Escobar, it doesn't seem like NXT is the place that they're going to be or that they need to be tied down to with everything going on with Legado and LWO.
All right. So I know I don't think we've necessarily hit everything on the show tonight, but unless you have anything else you want to bring up, I am going to wrap things up because I've got to be up extremely early in the morning to get to work.
We did not discuss Sol Ruka's return match.
We didn't. So let's see. Hold on. Where was that? Where was that in your report? Right there. Sol Ruka, Brinley Reese, 3 minutes and 18 seconds. Sol Ruka went over with her Soul Snatcher. After the match, Blair Davenport hit the ring and attacked Sol Ruka. Which there was a reason for that. And I know there was a reason
because
for that.
Davenport,
it's escaping my brain.
Davenport originally in storyline is the one that injured her knee when she
was
going around, before she was revealed to be the person who injured, Nikita Lyons and everybody else. She was in storyline. They had Davenport be the attacker to wreck Ruka's knee and put her out for 7 months.
That's right. So you know, it looks like we're going to be seeing continuation of that feud between Davenport and Sol Ruka, which I am in favor of. I want to see more out of Blair Davenport. I feel like she's being incredibly underutilized right now.
Yes.
I was really expecting to see her, and I think all three of us were. You, Kelly, and I were all expecting to see Blair Davenport just like shoot up to the NXT title scene, and she did, but wasn't successful in capturing the title, and she hasn't really been doing much of note since. So glad to see she's doing something, and a little bit of a wardrobe change. She's very, very colorful tonight. We usually see her in like black and things like that. So I don't know. I liked it. Brinley Reese, I really like Brinley Reese, but I want to know how far this gimmick can go while Thea Hale is still in NXT. It's a little different, but it's so similar to Thea Hale. And they're so similar in their stature, the way they look, body type, and everything. I feel like it's almost too similar, but I still like it. I mean, Brinley Reese pulling it off well, at least so far. But I don't know exactly how far that, like I said, I don't know how far that gimmick can go while Thea Hale's still around doing what she's doing. So, Sol Ruka, Brinley Reese.
So I was most interested. So this is her first match on NXT TV, but I believe she's had at least a match or two on Level Up. Sol Ruka, that is, since returning. My biggest, what I was watching out for the most in this match was to see if there was any ring rust with Sol Ruka or if there was any hesitancy in her movements, in her offense, all those things. But the first real big one that caught me was when she flipped out of something from Brinley Reese and landed on her feet and just immediately went into her next attack. Didn't show any hesitation, didn't show any fear, just went straight at it. She did have a decently sized knee brace on her left knee. So I'm sure getting used to moving around with that is not an easy thing to do. But she looked pretty fluid in the ring tonight, coming back after all this time. And, I believe it was a torn ACL. 7 months from a torn ACL, that's pretty damn quick.
Actually, that is pretty quick, yeah. It's usually like 9-10 months.
Yeah, so either, maybe she's one of those who's a super recovery person and she can just heal more quickly than others. And if so, good for her, because she definitely has a style that is much different than others, and her character is also a bit different. So it'd be good because they were giving her a pretty big push before she was injured, and I don't have any reason to believe that they would think any otherwise as having her return. So unfortunately for Blair Davenport, I feel like she's only here to put over Sol Ruka as her first big feud back, which, as we've said, if we go back to, and I know the storyline called for this, but if we go back to Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyria, I really think it would have been a different and better. Now, I know the whole Roxanne Perez thing might be a little different, but I think the last, 4 or 5 months, where Valkyrie has been champion, I think I wouldn't have felt so bland to me if they had gone with Blair Davenport at that point, or I was even advocating for this long beforehand. So she, her Lash Legend, not just because of their size, but their styles are something that the NXT Women's Division doesn't necessarily have. And she brings more of that Japanese strong style with her background and her experience there. And, the kamigoye that she hits is something you don't see as much in the U.S., except for those that are from Japan or trained in Japan and wrestled in Japan. And it's those kind of things that she does that are different. And I do wish that they would push her more, but they keep putting her in spots where it doesn't make sense for her to be the one to go over, unfortunately. Moving on to Brinley Reese, to me, the issue with Reese. Yeah, you did the Spears, and I did the Reese.
Spears.
The issue with Brinley Reese to me right now is that she is all character, and there's not much behind the character, right? In the ring, it just seemed like a pretty basic face moveset tonight. And while that's fine, I didn't really feel drawn to what she was doing in the ring very much, right? And her character is essentially a face version of the Simon system, but one where it's very self-empowering, lots of self-help, essentially. And even after she lost and she was at the entrance with Idris Onofe and Malik Blade. And by the way, Idris Onofe, that guy looks like Brawly from Dragon Ball. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. But he is just so yoked all of a sudden and cut. It's just like, man, Why you gotta like exist and make me look like I do, dude? That's not fun. But Brynley Reese was still smiling.
Skipped the six pack. I went for the whole keg. You know.
At least you were shirted. At least I hope you're shirted tonight. I'm assuming you're shirted after the
tonight.
The snap
I
a couple weeks ago.
Not only am I shirted, I am wearing my Trogdor the Burninator T-shirt that
good
I just got
you.
In the mail.
Good for you, man. It's and I'm just glad that either way the camera didn't go on today. But she was smiling after she was defeated by Sol Ruka and got hit with that Soul Snatcher. I need to see a little bit more outside of this over-the-top character from her. It does have shades of Thea Hale, but there are nuances of difference. I'm not sure how many of the fans will get the nuances of difference, but I just think that we need to see more beyond this happy-go-lucky girl. And really, I think that's going to come with the more interactions that they have, that they show together on screen between her, Inoue, and Blade, and what eventually this relationship is supposed to become about, because the way it started was they kept losing. She came in and did a pep talk, and Blade said, "What do we have to lose?" And Inoue was like, "Really, dog?" And that was the night that we thought, okay, Inoue might be turning on Blade soon because he's not buying into this whole Brynley Reese thing. And then they kind of went away for a bit, and now we're coming back, so I think the development of those three together is what's going to be crucial in both Brynley Reese's sort of acceptance as a wrestler. Well, I don't want to say development again, but acceptance. And then how we view Blade and Inoue moving forward, because, you know, for a long time it was Inoue, he needs to get away from Blade. And then Blade started improving and bulking up and adding a little bit to his arsenal, and now it's a bit more even, but I still think Inoue has more of the potential. So we'll see what happens with them. And then with Sol Ruka, again, looked smooth, didn't really see any rust. The thing I was a little concerned about was she didn't seem to get as much air on her Soul Snatcher tonight, but that also could have been because of the fact that Reese was kind of kneeling down a little lower, so maybe Ruka adjusted for that as she went up. But usually she gets pretty high, so it's good for her that when she returned, she did get a huge reaction from the crowd, and they popped big again for her Soul Snatcher. So all in all, right now, it seems like Sol Ruka is again being set up to be a big-time babyface in the women's division. Fortunately for Blair Davenport, that means she's probably eating another loss in the feud. And then for Brynley Reese, we just need to see what the future holds in terms of her development, because they're confident enough to put her in the ring. But again, right now I'm not feeling enough in the in-ring from her in-ring offense to really get me to latch on to her. And this character right now is just a bit too over the top.
All right. With that said, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on, well, actually I haven't said that in a long time because I wasn't going to keep promoting Twitter, but hey, there you go. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. It's not like it's hard to find me. It's just my name. And you can check the things I do out at NateLindberg.com. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_Lee253. My report for tonight's show up on the Torch and the VIP side. And I will be off next week as we have a state holiday, and it's one of the few days that Vanessa and I get to have off together. So you and Kelly can hold it down, and I'll be back the week after.
Sounds like a plan. It sounds like a plan to me. Kelly, he does this whole thing. He skips two shows. I don't know if he does it on purpose. I don't think so. I think it's just coincidence, but he should be back next week with me. If not, then I'll find somebody else. And, you know, we'll talk to you next week about some NXT. Take care, guys.